No matter what happens, I know we'll meet again. We finished the Cardcaptor Sakura anime!
We're Lucy and Robin, and we'll be your guides through Clamp's Wonderland. So the most exciting news is that Clamp like redid clamp.net, and they're doing their own podcast now, which you can watch/listen to on YouTube with auto subtitles. So that means this is the future we're living in, and Child Me is losing her shit. What an age we live in.
Yeah, we live in a beautiful time.
We really don't, but this is cool.
Yeah.
It's nice to have something good.
Yeah, we live in a time of great possibilities.
Oh, God.
I guess quick life updates. I survived 2 pirate-themed camping events, including one where we hosted a burlesque show one night, threw a whole-ass party the other night, and spent basically every other moment, like, setting up or tearing down one of those things, except for a few moments that we did spend in a river with some beer, which was nice.
Man, that sounds like... The being in a river with some beer sounds amazing. The rest of it sounds great to attend, but I'm glad I wasn't having to do all that.
Yeah, the river and the beer was definitely... Wait, no. The beer and the river, which didn't just happen, I swear, was definitely the highlight, but it was all fun. It was just very tiring, and I think I need to sleep for like a month now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my life is super crazy, too, because a book project kind of dropped in my lap. I guess at some point I'll get to talk about it, but I haven't really, it's not ready to talk about yet. But in order to prepare myself for quick turnaround time, like the deadlines are pretty soon. So I'm like, cool, I finished like a comic pitch and a novel draft and a bunch of stuff so that I can focus on this other thing. So that means I kind of worked myself to death for a couple weeks, and then it's going to get worse. Because I have, like, multiple conventions. Like, all of the conventions I have for the rest of the year are right in a row. They're so close to each other.
Oh, God.
And it's happening now at around the same time that I have to do work for the book. And that is just how it goes. So, like, I feel like I just moved, and now I have to do all this stuff. So that's...
You just moved, like, 6 months ago. It's fine.
It was 5 months ago.
Yeah. I was close.
Anyway, yes, we're good. We're fine.
Yeah.
Also, hey everybody, this is it. It's the last batch of Cardcaptor Sakura episodes. And I am so excited. We've had a really good time with this. Like, honestly, it has been so lovely to watch the anime, but also it is just not like, man, we really are better at talking about comics. Like, it's so much better for us to like, man, I have so much more to say about the comics process and just okay, looking forward to being done with this, which I'm sure I'll say like 10 more times. These episodes that we just watched concluded the series in March of 2000, so that is it's 23 years ago, and I don't want to think about it. But it did not conclude for all viewers. There's an interesting story that I picked up from YouTuber Mercury Falcon about the original airing of the last episode of the series and its relationship to fandom. So, one thing to keep in mind, because the format of our podcast is what it is, the anime did actually end before the manga. You know, like with X, but dumb Ching, because the manga isn't done yet. That's the joke. Okay, I'm sorry. Too soon. Anyway... That means that Sakura fans were so excited to see the final episode and find out what happens. And, like, that was a lot of fans. Like, a lot of people were watching this show. But the thing is, people have busy schedules, right? And in the year 2000, the way that you handled that, because we didn't have streaming services and whatever, was that you would set your VCR to record an episode of something if you couldn't be home to watch it when it aired. And that would be kind of, like... That was like your only option, right? If you couldn't watch something when it aired and you weren't going to wait like a year for it to come out on home video, or 6 months or whatever, then you were going to record it off the TV yourself, which was totally legal and something you were supposed, you know, you're fine to do. Cool. So people, like lots of people, set their VCRs to record the episode from, you know, 6 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. when it was airing on an NHK satellite network. I can't remember which one. We've mentioned it before. I'm sorry. So the thing is, there was also, on that same network, a very big sumo match between Takano Nami and Musashi Maru, who was the Yokozuna at the time, and that preempted the show and pushed its airtime back a little bit, which meant that they recorded part of a sumo match, and then most of the Cardcaptor Sakura episode, and then it cut out right at the end because the recording stopped at 6:30 p.m., and the Sakura episode started at, let's say, 6:15, 6:10 p.m. So they didn't get the full episode on their tapes. And these would be people who were probably in tape trading circles, which was a really big deal at the time, where you would record things and then pass them around so that people who didn't get a chance to record that because they were recording something else at the time, you would get to see different shows that, you know, you hadn't caught when they ran. Or that you weren't a fan of until a little later. Anyway, imagine the fandom blue balls as tons and tons of very serious people who really cared about recording this got not the end and did not get to see what happened in like the last 5 minutes of the episode. Tragic. And there was no YouTube or Twitter. Like, if you weren't physically trading tapes, like, how were you going to see this? And the manga wouldn't wrap up for weeks. So most fans just had to go on message boards and get, like, written recaps. Anyway, Mercury Falcon's video, A Sumo Wrestler Ruined Cardcaptor Sakura, is a very fun watch. I totally recommend it. He's a great resource in general. He also, in that episode, disclosed that Cardcaptor Sakura was the most money/resources that the NHK had dumped into an anime in 1998. I don't know what has broken that record since. Which is pretty relevant to us, right? Like, I know in the beginning we discussed how big of a production this anime appeared to be, but having a little more info about that is great. Some information like this, like, exactly what I'm seeking most fervently when we write episodes. It's really hard to find this information because it's obscured under how much has been written by and for fans and sort of promotional materials and marketing speak rather than the straight up info, right? So like knowing that this got a ton of money and understanding that most anime, no matter how good the story is, just doesn't always get the same amount of resources put into it. You know, like, that information isn't particularly public, and it isn't always completely relevant, but it is an interesting part of culture and understanding material culture. Man, research is tricky, and we literally can't do enough of it, because, like, we don't have time or resources to do a perfect job. And I'm also never satisfied with what we can do, because I just want to know more. Like, I can't do enough research. It's always exciting. So sometimes we're, like, left trying to glean from translated interviews and opinion pieces a lot of the time, so it's really nice to have a little more solid of info to pull from sometimes. In many ways, the amount of money and marketing put into Cardcaptor Sakura doesn't matter. Like, we're covering the work with an eye to what it's meant to us over the years, and some amount of, you know, training and literary analysis is also entering somewhere in our discussions. But comics and cartoons don't exist in a vacuum. Understanding where this came from, why it is the way it is helpful too. This anime is fantastic. It holds up, it can still enchant a new audience, but some of what makes it special is the attention to detail, the vision and effort put into it, which not every production receives. Many levels of industry, from the creators to editors to publishers and animation studio heads, network TV folks, a lot of people wanted this to succeed, and they wanted it to make money, to be a flagship that would help their companies or divisions make money in the future. And to this day, Cardcaptor Sakura sells merch, and books, and food at themed anime cafes. A new season of Clear Card Anime is on its way to screens. This has had cultural impact and economic impact, whether we love it or think it's good or not. So, it's really nice that it is so lovable. Because not everything sold to kids has as much heart as this. And I just, I don't know, wanted to start the episode with something that probably should have been at the end of the episode, but just reflecting on it a little bit.
Yeah, it's a good energy to go in our last little stretch of episodes.
We say that, but there's going to be an episode about the movies next, I promise. Like,
yeah,
we really have one more to go.
We're not done, but we're done-ish.
We're so close.
Yes.
All right. On this final stretch, let's go, Lucy.
Okay. Episode 59. Tomoyo helps little Jacket Sakura stretch and observes that she's not as tired as she used to be when she first started changing Clo cards into Sakura cards. That means she's getting stronger. Tomoyo also swoons over getting to capture Sakura's growing up and maturing on video, and reassures Sakura that a little danger means nothing when she gets to be at her side. She lays it on a bit thick and makes Sakura blush, which makes Shaodan blush too, and Ariel merely smiles as he observes all of this. Next, it's one-on-one basketball time. Sakura is amazing, of course, but we're given a dramatic lead-up to Ariel versus Shaodan. Sakura cheers them both on, of course. Despite saying, "Please go easy on me," in a rote kind of way, Ariel is in fact very good at basketball because, of course, he's good at everything. I mean, he is, like, incredibly old, so sure. I mean, kind of. He also pulls a weirdo move by advising Shaodan in his three-point shot, which he ends up making perfectly. "As long as you remain calm and don't lose yourself in the moment, you'll become stronger," Ariel says, walking off, leaving Shaodan to just, like, deal with that.
Later, a sleepy Yukito is helping maintain the baseball diamond when he walks up to the fence between their schools, only to see Ariel. He transforms, and Yue recognizes Ariel as Clo. But why is he here in this form? Ariel puts him to sleep and holds him kind of tenderly. He says he's sorry, but there's something he must do. And he notes that Yue's power consumption is too much, and also that he has someone close to him who could help with that, but it's hard when his two forms are of two minds. Ariel's having too much fun to stop what he's doing, so he hopes Yue can figure out his shit soon. Then he transforms him back into Yukito in time for Toya to find him and admonish him for being incommunicado. Toya is very suspicious of Ariel's retreating form. Even later, we see Shaodan having tea with Tomoyo.
We love the amount of solidarity shown between these characters.
Tomoyo is counseling him through his crush, saying that, yeah, lots of people love Sakura because she's so nice and cute. He knows, and that's part of the problem. They discuss Ariel, and Tomoyo says she doesn't think he's watching over her with the same love as Shaodan is. That's a moment for Shaodan to realize that Tomoyo is truly observant.
Tomoyo knows all!
She tells him that Sakura will never know his feelings if he doesn't tell her. And then Sakura pops up in a cute new outfit that she was trying on for Tomoyo this whole time, it seems. Now Shaodan is put on the spot. Tomoyo even exits stage left to force the issue. But he's saved by the Clo. They sense his presence nearby and set out for the school.
Kato had to catch up with them since she was out with her friends already, and he seems unhappy, but it's just because he thinks they were having treats without him, which is true, but Tomoyo brought him some, so it's all fine.
Priorities, Kato. It's okay, those are my priorities too.
Shaodan notices that Tomoyo always helps Sakura out while he feels like he's done nothing, but Tomoyo reassures him that that's not the case and urges him to stay cheerful and keep going. Sakura's a bit scared there might be ghosts, but Shaodan gets to step up and reassure her that he doesn't sense any.
Also, she's calling him Shaodan-kun, not Lee-kun now, and everyone notices. Since the elevator episode, they've been closer, she explains. Shaodan blushes.
Then a basketball bounces at them, and leads them on a merry chase through the school with no one apparently bouncing it. They track it into a classroom and then lose it there, but when they try to move on to another room, the door they used seems to just lead to another classroom instead of the hallway. Every door they slide open leads to a room it didn't before, and they end up finding the basketball in the misplaced music room. Hello, Piano-kun! And they lose Tomoyo on the way.
They try to puzzle out how to get through these randomized rooms, but even the through card wouldn't be able to help if the rooms aren't in any kind of normal order anymore. Like, through to where? Shaodan has some magic that would work if they had something that belonged to the person they were trying to find, and so they locate Tomoyo's umbrella.
Tomoyo sings from somewhere, and that bolsters Sakura's spirit.
And reminds us of the last two times they've done this premise.
But it also gives Sakura an idea. She has them turn off all the lights, the circuit breaker is in that room, and she transforms the shadow card, harkening back to a first season episode, and she has Shadow lead them to a person who would cast it, Tomoyo.
I guess this works. Why not?
Sure. They also follow her voice, and while Shadow covers Tomoyo with its disembodied floating cloak shape for a moment, nothing ominous happens because even that card is Sakura's friend.
We get a little, "I need to be more careful," line from Ariel, who of course was watching the whole time. And at the end, Sakura says she might have cried if not for Shadon's support, and this is almost Shadon's moment to confess to her, but Kaido crashes the moment, asking her to pose for Tomoyo, etc.
Also, this episode is called The Ball Trap. Do with that what you will.
And I will say that, like, I like how, I mean, this is kind of adapting something from the manga, kind of, not entirely, but by having, like, the randomly bouncing basketball that just doesn't really have much of a conclusion, it does tie that neatly into the playing basketball at the beginning, and I'm like, yeah, that was nice. Like, it doesn't make a ton of plot sense, but it felt visually cohesive, and that's nice.
Yeah.
All right, episode 60. The kids are doing plein air sketching, and of course Ariel is amazing at it. Shadon is full of feelings when he watches Ariel and Sakura together and kind of mopes off, but Tomoyo catches up with him. She noticed what happened last night and asked him when he's going to tell Sakura about how he feels. He admits all he could think about last night was how much he needs to tell her, but before he can do that, he wants to do what's right and tell Mei Ling he's found someone. He tried calling her, but Mei Ling wanted to have an important conversation in person, and they'll see each other for winter break when he goes back to Hong Kong, so he assumes that's when he can talk to her. But nope, she's here! Mei Ling pops up right in the middle of their conversation. She just hopped on a plane immediately after he called, apparently.
The most extra! The other kids are so excited to see her, but apparently she can only stay until tomorrow, since she still has school and everything.
God...
Sakura has no clue this is about her or anything, so she just gets excited about hanging out with Mei Ling that day, and Mei Ling agrees to hang out, though she probably knows a little bit more about the situation than Sakura does. Sakura calls home to tell Kaido, who is playing video games like it's his job, about Mei Ling being in town. She also tells him to get the rice started, which is adorable and very, like, domestic.
Yeah, no, that just feels like our household all the time. It's just somebody yelling from the other room, "Can you get the rice started?" Like, oh yes. No. It's just life.
He loses the game right before he makes 4 million points, but maybe he'll remember the food. And he had a message for Mei Ling, not to be surprised when he shows her his cool, true form next time.
Yeah, Mei Ling's missed a lot.
Yeah.
Back with Sakura, Ariel asks who Mei Ling is. And so we're getting all our cast connected, even if just for one episode. Mei Ling walks home with the other kids, and she and Sakura have a good time with each other. But Mei Ling accuses her of being dazed all the time, so it's hard to tell if something weird is happening again. They're excited to go see a new shop that just opened, but as they get to Penguin Park, they sense clothes presents. Oh no.
Small, cute penguins start floating in a circle and then fly at the kids. It is a Sanrio nightmare. As the kids battle these cute mascots, Sakura uses her cards, but she's not sure she has the power to use a heavy hitter. It's a cold day, and that's setting Mei Ling back, but that also reminds her of the freeze card Sakura caught at the ice rink with her. That will stop all the penguins! Sakura transforms that card and traps the small penguins with the big animated penguin slide that was about to fuck their shit up, this poor slide.
And once they're on ice, or in ice, Shadon uses lightning magic to bust the little ones right up. Go team! Sakura says Mei Ling saved her, and they all check in with each other, but Tomoyo and Mei Ling share a look, because Shadon asks after Sakura, not Mei Ling. And no matter how nice Sakura is to Mei Ling, it doesn't quite make up for that.
Yeah. Ariel releases his power over the park, and the kids hear someone coming. After having messed up the park a bit, they don't want to get caught, so they run off and think that, every time something has happened recently, no one has noticed.
Echoes of Kekkai's from X, perhaps?
Tomoyo catches Mei Ling for a moment and reminds her that she likes her very much, and she can think of her if something happens. Mei Ling doesn't know what to say to this.
Did ships launch? Tell us.
And the kids disperse after realizing that they can't all be there to see Mei Ling off in the morning. They say their goodbyes now, and Mei Ling reminds them that Hong Kong is nearby and she can see them again.
I do forget that to some extent, because to me, I'm just like, wow, that's such a long trip. And you're like, man, not that bad. I mean, it's absurd that she did this, totally absurd that she did this, but it is still not like physically impossible, which it would be for us visiting Hong Kong in like just one day.
Yeah.
Overall, Mei Ling seems like her usual energetic self, but at Shadon's place, when he tries to tell her about his feelings for Sakura, she already knows. She's acting cheerful, saying of course it's Sakura. She could tell he really likes her, so the engagement is off.
But then she packs her suitcase, puts on her shoes, and goes to Tomoyo's all by herself, refusing Shaodan's help walking her over. And she lets herself cry on Tomoyo over this. She never loses to anyone. How can this happen? And worse, she still can't hate Sakura. She's so good. She knows Sakura and Shaodan will be happy together.
But it still hurts. So she'll cry it out until she'll never want to cry over Shaodan again. And Tomoyo is just kindly there for her as she loses it.
God, this is such a good character moment for both of them. Like, Tomoyo is in a similar situation, but she has obviously already kind of, like, her unrequited love feelings for Sakura. But it makes me wonder what Tomoyo went through before she kind of got to that point, and if she's really as okay with it as she always acts.
Maybe someday we'll know. Or maybe she's just perfect. I would not count that out.
In the morning, Shaodan does meet Mei Ling at the airport to say goodbye. And he's sad and confused, but she's so tough about it and tells him that since he chose Sakura over cute little Mei Ling, he needs to catch up and actually tell her now. Then she says she'll see him over break and takes off. Wei, the butler guy, remember, says Mei Ling is actually very sweet, isn't she? And Shaodan agrees.
At school, Tomoyo and Sakura discussed the letters Mei Ling left for them. Mei Ling apologized for wetting Tomoyo's lap, which is awkward but funny, and reminded Sakura that she needs to notice the things around her, with a small additional note in Chinese that Sakura can't read. Shaodan's note ends with the same phrase, which he translates for Sakura as Mei Ling calling him her dear friend, instead of something more romantic.
Aw, Mei Ling. Sad. But moving along, episode 61! We open this episode finding out that Sakura used the mirror card to make a duplicate to stay at home for her while she went out and did some card business. We hear she changed 4 whole cards! But now that she's back, she dismisses the mirror real quick so her brother doesn't catch them. Which is unfortunate, because it definitely seemed like Mir wanted to tell her something. We even saw her communing with the other cards. What could they be up to? Then we see Ariel's magic circle glow around the mirror card as Sakura tries to get to sleep. And it seems like maybe he can see what's going on.
Yeah, it's like maybe he's spying on her through them. It's kind of hard to tell. In the morning, Keto mentions Toya maybe knowing too much. Sakura says if he knew, he'd definitely make fun of her for it, so he definitely doesn't. And downstairs, he makes fun of how slow she was in the morning and how much she eats, which reinforces her belief that he would never let her live it down if he knew that she was into magic.
It's Christmas time again, and on her way to school, Sakura thinks about what to get all her friends, though she seems to be forgetting someone. Toya catches up on his bike and asks if she has a present for Dad yet. He suggests a wallet, and when she says she doesn't have the allowance for that, he says they can go in on it together, like a nice big brother.
At school, Toya finds Yuki asleep with his head down on the desk. He came to school early and slept there so he wouldn't be late again, but he just can't keep his eyes open. Toya wants to have an important conversation with him about this situation, but Ruby Moon shows up and hangs on him to mess that up, leaving Yuki to go back to sleep.
Side note, sometimes Happy, my fiancé, will get up when I get up and go down to his office to sleep on the futon we have in his office so he can jump awake and be at his computer like 5 minutes before he's on the clock. Same energy, I guess.
Kind of. At school, Shaodan is also early. He and Sakura are supposed to be early, because they're doing the daily report together again, so he writes their names on the chalkboard, then leans his head forward to rest against her name with a little sigh. He still hasn't confessed to her. And then, of course, she shows up, and he darts across the room, cleaning out the erasers as though he hadn't been interacting with her name at all.
She's chipper as always, and asks if they celebrate Christmas in Hong Kong. He says they do, and they do exchange gifts. Sakura says she'll give him a gift, even though she doesn't have much allowance, and then they both get blushy and quiet. Good thing Leon Mazaki shows up to tell her a tall tale about how Christmas trees used to be kept outside, and therefore the only food served on Christmas was frozen stuff, like ice cream, just to ruin the moment.
Later, the bells ring, and Ariel perches atop the bell tower, looking ominous, because why not? Just reminding us that he's here. And Tomoyo has big Christmas present plans for Sakura, and she wants to film it, so she pops in to discuss that, and then pops out to keep preparing. Sakura has so much to work on for presents that Shaodan volunteers to finish writing up the daily notes they have to give their teacher, that's the daily report thing, which gives her more time. But that sure isn't confessing to her now, is it? He is in despair.
As Sakura leaves, she runs into Ariel playing a hymn on the piano. She stops by to praise his playing, and he says he's playing for Mass, and explains what a hymn is, kind of. He highlights the feelings of gratitude they're meant to elicit, though cites gratitude to water and plants and wind, not just people, and she's moved by that.
Toya holds the door open for the still groggy Yukito later, and he limps down the path. Again, Toya tries to confront him, but again, Ruby Moon jumps on him, and Yuki walks off, tired and maybe a bit miserable. Toya accuses Ruby Moon of doing this on purpose, and they just smirk. Sakura actually runs into Shoutan one more time that evening, and asks him about gratitude to plants and wind and stuff, but he's not sure what she's talking about. She tries to explain that she feels like there's someone who she needs to do something for, but she doesn't know who.
Before they can discuss this further, they sense something. He's willing to go check it out on his own, but she insists on going with him. Actually, she calls up Mir and asks her for her help again. She needs to send her shopping with Toya as her double, and Mir is happy to oblige because of her kind of crush on Toya. Again, she tries to tell Sakura something, but she can't get it out before Sakura and Shaolan rush off for the disturbance.
Under a beautiful winter sunset, the kids see a railing from the nearby park come free of its moorings and fly up into the sky. Meanwhile, Toya catches up with Mirror and instantly knows it's Mirror, not his sister, but still invites her shopping. He understands why Sakura would do this. The kids battle the railing a bit, but it reforms itself no matter how they attack it. Sakura invokes the mist card, transforming it in the process, and uses it to make the railway rust away into nothing. Harsh. These kids are rough on infrastructure. That's expensive to replace. This reminds Sakura of something, so she rushes back to the school.
Toya thanks Mira for helping him go shopping with a trip to a cafe, and also has given her an early Christmas present of hair ribbons for the long hair she has in her true form. How thoughtful! And as she treasures these things, he thanks her for everything she does for Sakura. It's painfully touching, if a bit weird. Later that night, Sakura flies witch-like to her window and drops in to play the tape she recorded. It's her playing Ariel's hymn. She wants to give the cards, especially Mir, still present, a gift for all their help. And Mir finally says what she's been trying to say, that on behalf of all the cards, they love her and are glad she's their master. When she returns to her card, Sakura notices that Mir has new ribbons in her hair.
Sakura tells Kero that she had Ariel teach her the right-hand part of the piece on the piano and he helped with the rest. So cute.
Okay, but yeah, if she can pick that up that well, that quickly, someone get that girl more music lessons.
Episode 62 opens with Sakura putting on a cute kimono with long sleeves. Kero says that even she looks calm and soothing in a kimono, and she says that if he insults her, he can't have any of the New Year's treats. So he lays on the compliments thicker, and she relents, agreeing to bring him food later. New Year's food, osachi gyori, are a really delicious tradition, so like no wonder he cares so much about this.
Sakura expects her brother to be a jerk about her cute kimono, too, but he surprisingly just says it looks good on her, you know, for a monster. Dad breaks up the siblings' minor squabble by delivering their New Year's cards. Sakura has a dragon card from Naoko, a pretty flower from Rika, some cool lore about Genten from Mei Ling, simple but nice calligraphy from Shaodan, and Toya sniffs at that one, admitting he probably doesn't like Shaodan because he and Sakura are getting along so much better now.
The family's all dressed up for their shrine visit, and as they walk there, they discuss their wishes. Sakura has a lot.
How big of an offering is she throwing in anyway, Toya asks.
They expect to meet Yukito there, but he's late, so Toya tells them to go on without him while he goes to check at Yukito's house. They do run into Tomoyo and her mom Sonomi, though. Sonomi is overjoyed to see Sakura, and less so to see her dad, as usual. At the shrine, we see Sakura and Tomoyo pull the rope to clatter the bells, clap, all of that, and we cut to Tomoyo recording Sakura's reaction as she opens a gift.
This gives Fujitaka and Sonomi a moment to talk, and he thanks her for the help with great-grandfather, which she's annoyed he even knew about. She photographs the girls together, and Tomoyo praises Sakura's cuteness again. Sadly, Sonomi has to run off to a meeting, but invites Sakura over again soon. Fujitaka says the New Year's dishes are almost done, so she can just go play with Tomoyo.
They go to pick up their fortunes, but why is Ariel the one handing them out? Well, Mizuki-sensei is abroad, so he's helping out. They don't know the full extent of his connection, and he doesn't tell them. But we know he's manipulating their fortunes somehow, since he makes one light up red.
See, that's subtle storytelling with color and lighting.
Sure.
Tomoe gets great luck and fantasizes about what outfits she'll get to put Sakura in. Embarrassing. But Sakura's fortune doesn't tell her what her luck is. It just tells her that the first dream she has in the new year will be what reveals her truth. Ariel says that's a special fortune for her.
Maybe we should take a quick break to mention that New Year's is really important. It's a very important event in Japan. Hatsumode, the visit to a Shinto shrine to do sanpai, a prayer, and make an offering, then receive a fortune. It's a big deal. So big that not everyone can make it to a shrine on the first, so lots of people observe it just within the first week of the new year. It's also a tradition that the first dream you have of the new year can prognosticate great luck if you dream of an eggplant or Mount Fuji. So I think Ariel's words are meant to kind of evoke that and build on that.
Yeah. Over at Yukito's house, Toya finds Yuki, beautifully dressed, passed out on his floor, and rushes to help him up. Yuki's like, "What are you doing here?" And Toya reminds him what's up and says that they still can catch up, but Yuki just collapses, and Toya sees that he's fading, like, literally disappearing. He holds him tight.
At Xiaodan's house, we're met with traditional Chinese music and New Year's greetings as he and Wei are making exquisite good luck peach-shaped sweets. Peaches are a very important sacred symbol of longevity and the blossoms of growth, especially around New Year's, though the Lunar New Year is usually later in February rather than January 1st. Japan switched to the Gregorian calendar that the West uses during the Meiji era, unlike most other East Asian countries. So I'm not sure if Chinese expats in Japan usually switch up their celebrations. I don't know that they do this, but these ones definitely did.
They're surprised to see Tomoyo and Sakura stop by. He's beat red that they're making him their first hello of the new year. They invite the girls in, and they're happy to oblige. This was all Tomoyo's idea, and he actually thanks her, though she doesn't let on much. They have the peach buns and tea and praise Xiaodan for his skills. Wei also notices that Sakura uses Xiaodan's first name, not his last name, now. Apparently she's the first non-family member who Xiaodan has invited to do that. Cue more blushing.
At home, Kero pigs out on Osachi Ryori and the peach manju, but Sakura is troubled that Yukito never made it to the shrine. They're going to visit with him tomorrow, at least. This definitely worries Kero, but he's also perturbed by the fortune she got. Well, she needs to have a dream to see what's up with the fortune, so he puts her to bed. And as she sleeps, the Book of Clo glows, and a card floats over to her. Everything goes dark except for floating, sleeping Sakura and the glowing card. We see a sequence of her standing on a magic circle while Klo's voice calls her name. The key floats before her, and he tells her to go on. She says the release incantation and uses her staff on a card, the dream card.
Then we're pulled way back into the sky, looking down over the city. She's flying high above her neighborhood and sees so many familiar places while impressive but ominous music plays. In the distance, she sees Tsukimina Shrine, then a darkness shoots up from it and obscures the sun and the whole sky. Everything is night dark, and we see a familiar sight. Two butterfly-winged figures on either side of a smaller figure with a large staff, perched on the torii gate. The small figure is so familiar, and Klo's voice is calling. Kero wakes her up, worried about her. But her staff and the dream card are in her hands, in the bed. She did all this in her sleep, for real. She explains the dream to Kero. She's a bit distressed, but Kero reminds her of her invincible spell, and that he's here for her. But they agree that this dream is probably prophetic, and she'll meet those figures at the shrine.
As a humongous change of pace, episode 63 is set in a water park. If you want to be jealous of elementary schoolers going to a water park, this episode will bring you there. It's got landscaping with palm trees, and Tomoyo imagines it as a perfect backdrop for a fancy swimwear that she could make for Sakura.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the water park episode of Hold On.
Yeah. I wanted to go to this pool. Seriously. I was like, this looks great.
Yeah, I want this field trip, please.
Xiaodan is just a blushing shy mess right now, but Sakura helps Lika learn to be a stronger swimmer. You'll remember, we found out she wasn't great at it during an earlier episode. Everyone has cute swimsuits and often matching hair accessories, which seems ridiculous to me because kids lose that shit all the time, but these are very good kids and very fashionable. Ariel and Xiaodan have a race, which it turns out is an escalation of a more friendly competition Yamazaki had invited Xiaodan into, but Xiaodan just can't stop challenging Ariel. Yamazaki cuts the tension about this by starting a new tall tale before Chiharu drags him off.
Anyway, Ariel smugly gives Shoudon advice again, and we agreed we would have dunked him. But it's okay, because Sakuta stays to hang out with Shoudon even after the others leave, and he's touched. Until Tomio shows up with a camera, and he tips back into the pool in shock. Anyway, they all go get drinks, and Sakuta says she needs to get a cream soda for Kaido because he was mopey, he wasn't allowed to come with her. They laugh about how maybe he tried to come along anyway, and we cut to a shadowy scene in her locker where Kaido has red glowing eyes and laughs maniacally about how he has in fact successfully sneaked himself into her bag. A small child overhears him with a fair amount of distress. Also, they keep saying cream soda, but I'm sure, pretty sure they mean ice cream float just by looking at it. But anyway, moving along.
Guess who's working here? Yukito and Toya, and Nakuru, the latter two, are on skates. The kids have barcodes on bracelets that Yuki scans to pay. Very contemporary, somehow. Ariel watches this ominously, and not because of the tech. Yukito brings them their drinks, and he and Ariel say hi, so they have to explain that they know each other. The kids are loving their sodas, and Toya is not loving Nakuru's presence. He sends them away to serve more sodas so he can check on Yukito, who definitely is still just slowly disappearing and still going to work. Oh my god. Toya tells him that he doesn't want him to ever disappear, and Yukito brushes it off. Toya tries to confront him about this, but as usual, Nakuru gets in the way.
Ariel sees this and is smug about it. For fuck's sake, Chloe, what the fuck? Jesus, child. But Kaido has emerged and is sneaking around on the floor. He flies up and secretly finishes off Sakuta's soda. He creeps around stealing snacks until Sakuta discovers him in a bush and yells at him at, like, the bush, causing a scene. Everyone stares. Sakuta hides Kaido in Shoudon's shirt, and they sneak past the other kids to get him out of the way. He has no shame about this, even though he was a big nuisance. Sakuta is going to cram him in a locker without any of the Wave Pool's famous apple pie, but they sense a Clo Card's presence. And a giant wave starts in the pool, threatening to break on all the swimmers, including Rika, who can't handle this at all.
Yuki and Toya throw off their shoes and visors to jump into the pool to help some other adults save the remaining kids. Even Yamazaki wants to jump in to save Dika, but other adults won't let him. Toya has a crying child in his arms, but he wants to help Dika too. The waves are just too overwhelming, though. Sakura has to use magic, even though it'll be hard to hide it in front of so many people. She jumps into a huge water slide and secretly releases the watery card from there so it can swoop around and turn the angry waves into gentle rain. Dika is saved, and the watery card is now a Sakura card.
Nakuru confronts Ariel. He was going to intervene if Sakura didn't save Dika in time, right? Why is he going so far? He says, they'll see. Ariel does check in with Dika, making sure she hasn't been turned off from swimming. But she hasn't, somehow.
Well, that's good, at least.
Yeah.
Alright. Episode 64. Kaido's left at home alone, so he's eating every snack in sight, including some shave ice left in the freezer for him. This is because Sakura is on another school vacation. Skiing, apparently, this time. School vacation? School trip? I just called it a school vacation, which is like the opposite of what this is, but it is a school trip.
Yes.
And it is absurd.
Yes.
It's an excuse to be in the snow, to have a snow episode, because we have to, I guess. We get some beautiful winter vistas and see the kids in snowsuits. Tomoyo is an expert already, just like at figure skating, but Sakuta's still getting used to being on skis at all.
Guess who also is a super cool expert skier? Ariel, of course! He does some smooth moves before Yamazaki shows up to tell us a story about skiing on Geta, and Ariel chimes in with even more details until the tall tale is up in the stratosphere. The less gillable kids enjoy that these boys get along so well.
I do feel like Ariel has found a kindred spirit, and it's very cute. Meanwhile, Shoudon is not in control on his skis at all, and nearly crashes into them as he careens down the mountain. He almost crashes into a tree, but Ariel saves him and gives him more smug advice that's way too knowing. Shoudon challenges him about this, but the other kids show up to help, though Sakura shows up on her ass.
That night the kids are gathered in the ski lodge because, oh my god, this school and its trips! Apparently Naoko and Sakura improved a lot at skiing. Rika helps fold flyers with Mr. Tedera, and I guess that's great. She even told the other kids not to bother coming to help, but this is a great time for Naoko to tell scary stories. She doesn't know any about ski resorts, though. She asks them for stories, but Yamazaki has only lies.
Naoko asks Ariel, since there are so many horror novels from England, and he has a story about a snowy mountain.
And we're suddenly invested in the stupid ski episode.
Just put a ghost in it and I can care.
Yeah.
He describes the snow falling harder and harder on a mountain until the Yuki Onna appears and causes an avalanche. Yamazaki notices that this is in fact a Japanese tale, but they can't finish the tale because it is bedtime. Tomoyo tries to convince Sakata that the Yuki Onna might be pretty, not scary, but Ariel is sorry he told a scary story if she doesn't like them. She says it's okay, but is it? She can't sleep that night and gets up, definitely preoccupied with the Yuki Onna.
Sheldon is still up by the fire, thinking about her. When she shows up, he's stricken with love, but still clams up. She notes he's always saying nothing when she asks what's up, but it starts snowing and she wants to go out on the balcony. He accompanies her and they see some bear statues with scarves, and this brings up Shaodan's handmade teddy bear. Sakata says she hopes Yukito accepted it when he gave it to him, but he says that what he feels for him is different from what he feels for someone else now. He was just drawn to the moon power. But the person he really likes...
Well, of course, she asks who it is, but then pulls back, saying it was rude to pry, and destroys his attempt to confess yet again, because that's all the show is right now, because it is drawn out a little too long.
Yeah. Classic Clamp, no one can finish a damn sentence.
Yeah. And, like, we could talk about this at the very end of the episode, but we're gonna talk about it right now. It is too reliant on this. You can kind of tell that maybe a few episodes... maybe don't need to be here because there's a little too much repetition.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we've gone too far.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of like, look, you can't, these characters ostensibly have a life outside of the episodes we're watching them in and they still haven't had a chance to talk to each other. Really? It's a little much.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next day, Sakata is a much better skier. So is Shaodan, though maybe not at her level. They get to do some free skiing until lunch, and Sakata and Shaodan are cleared for the intermediate hill. Sakata wants to go with him, but he says he's good and just pushes away. Sakata asks Tomoyo what's up, and she tells her that the reason he just tripped was not because of his athleticism. He was watching Sakata over his shoulder. Of course, Sakata doesn't get it.
Snowflakes drift down again, and Tomoyo wants to record Sakata dancing in the snow. Sakata just wants to ski, though. They need to catch the ski lift up the hill anyway, and Sakata ends up riding with Ariel. She remembers his words about the Yuki Onna, and she thinks that she sees one in the distance. Ariel says it's a blizzard now and too dangerous, so maybe they should just catch the lift going back downhill.
Back at the lodge, the other kids also notice the weather is like Ariel's story, but Tomoyo notices Sakata and Ariel aren't there, and she gets worried. Sakura's so freaked out about a possible Yuki Onna sighting that she jumps when Ariel touches her when they're waiting for the ski lift. Then an avalanche starts. It's heading for the lodge. Sakura has to ski away fast to use magic where Ariel can't see her. To which I say lol. LMFAO. Anyway, she uses time, the time card, to stop everything. But she doesn't have the power to hold it long enough to figure out what to do next. And she's overtaken by the snow. All hope is lost. Until we see Ariel's sun staff swing and see him use close magic to save her and stop the avalanche.
Next thing we see is the sky having cleared up and Ariel helping Sakata ski back to join everyone. He tells the camera he doesn't want to make her sad like this, but has no other choice.
All right. Episode 65. Sakata walks home from the grocery store, sneaking a bun that she's not sharing with Kyoto, only to overhear Toya talking to Yukito and grabbing his hand. It looks like they're having a fight. Sakata intervenes because it looks surprisingly mean, but she actually had just interrupted a little film that the high schoolers are making. That explains why the boys were in slightly old-fashioned outfits. Nakadu's also there, and they invite Sakata to be in the film.
Tomoyo is excited that Sakata will be in a movie, but she's very sad she can't do the costumes. Maybe she can do makeup? It's a story about a detective finding a fugitive set in the Taisho era, so it's a pretty complicated project, by Nakadu, by the way. Toya's the detective, Yukito is the fugitive, Sakata's the fugitive's little sister. It's a party.
They discuss this at the Kinomoto house that evening, drinking a lot of tea or maybe coffee to help keep Yukito awake. Yet again, Toya tries to confront Yuki, but this time Sakata interrupts. She also notices he's fading away, even though he's maintaining his sweet and gentle persona as always.
Ariel lets Nako do film in his ridiculous mansion, and they explain that they're okay with being director instead of star because they can tell Toya what to do. Supi points out that Sakura might figure out Ariel's connection to Nakuru, and Toyo almost certainly will, but Ariel says that's part of why he agreed to this, to get Toya and Yukito over to his place.
Turns out Tomoyo insisted on Shoudan coming to watch the filming. She is a very good wingman. Tomoyo is Sakura's stylist, and all the high schoolers adore how cute Sakura is in her little Taisho-era outfit. Shoudan is also a Sakura's cuteness enjoyer, so he's very blushy about this whole thing. Ariel is mysterious about his connection to this filming location, but does hang around being Ariel-ish, which Toya notices and is annoyed by. Inside, Sakura's nervous and about learning her lines.
Ariel tells her to sit down in his big, impressive chair so Tomoyo can do touch-ups. As soon as she sits down, Sakura senses Chloe's presence, but just for a second, and of course she can't quite place it. But the show must go on. At first, Sakura's stiff and stressed, moving robotically like Shoudan did back in their own play. Toya can tell she's nervous, but he's way more concerned about Yukito, who is still sleepy despite having slept the entire previous day, apparently. Good thing Ariel is just smugly watching all of this and not helping anyone in any way!
Turns out, Sakura's doing just fine on her scenes. She doesn't think so, but the high schoolers do, and Tomoyo is filming a making-of video. There's one more scene on the veranda, where Yukito shakes off Toya as the detective before revealing the true culprit. Nakuru hangs on Toya a bit, but things are going pretty well. The kids keep quiet and Ariel sneaks away to quote-unquote make tea while the high schoolers do the scene.
As Toya delivers his lines, which are basically what he's been trying to say to Yukito anyway, Yukito passes out and falls over the balcony. Oh no! Toya catches him by the wrist, but that's not going to be enough, so Sakura, in her cute outfit, releases Windy to help cushion Yuki's inevitable fall. That's great, and he's not a broken wreck, but he is quite transparent.
Ariel offers the two boys a room where Yuki can convalesce. Yukito wakes up shortly and apologizes for being so much trouble, which is the saddest thing ever. But Toya's just worried he'll disappear. He finally says he knows what Yukito is. Oh, JK, Nakuru interrupts this again, too. They want to film right away. This is it. Toya pushes Nakuru out, saying he has to talk to Yuki. Finally.
Outside, Supi tells Ruby Moon to deal, and Ruby Moon says they don't want Toya's special thing to be taken away because they want it. But it also means that Sakura's team will be more powerful than theirs.
Inside, Toya puts a hand on Yuki's face and says he knows he's not human, and it's okay. Yukito transforms into Yue, and Toya asks his name now that he's finally met him. Yue says Yukito didn't want Toya to know he wasn't a real person, but Toya says that he understands what's at stake here. He doesn't want Yukito to disappear, and he'll sacrifice his own power to stop it. He won't be able to see his mom again, but it wasn't fair that only he could see her anyway. It'll be much harder not being able to use his power to protect Sakura, so he needs Yue to promise to protect her.
This annoys Yue. That's his job. He'd sacrifice himself to protect Sakura. And Toya says that's the problem. If he sacrifices himself, Yukito will disappear also, and Toya can't have that. So Yue needs to promise to take care of himself and Sakura. Yue is moved and agrees, taking Toya into an embrace. A magic circle flares up, and he takes Toya's power. Toya collapses onto the bed himself this time.
Sakura bursts in crying. She heard everything, and she and Yue have a good little conversation. Then she tells the still unconscious Toya that she'll protect him. She'll rush to his side if he's ever in danger. So good! Sakura catches a sense of Chloe again, and Ariel, who was, of course, watching, rushes away, realizing she's so powerful now that she's bound to catch him.
That night, everyone goes home, and Tomoyo and Shoudan share a sad look with each other as they bid farewell to Sakura. She tells Kato that Toya already knew about her, and knew about Yukito and Yue. This causes Kato to crash his car in his racing game, aww!
Sakura is so sad that her brother had to give up his power. But Kato says he knew that would happen. He didn't tell her because he didn't want her to be sad and blame herself. And he says that they love and care about her so much because she's their friend, not just master. And they want to do whatever they can for her. And she accepts this.
She also thinks about how sad she would have been if Yukito disappeared. If anyone she loves disappears, of course, but Yukito especially. Since she doesn't know if she can promise to prevent anything sad happening in the future, She needs to tell Yukito how she feels.
Gasp. But Shaodan needs to tell her how he feels. Oh no!
Oh no! Okay, episode 66. We start this episode by seeing some of the film that Nakadoa directed. Sakata's embarrassed, but Tomoyo is enchanted. Toya and Yukito look so dramatic in their outfits, and their dialogue really mirrors the truth. Yukito having an alter ego, etc.
Yukito is sad about this, though, because it's news to him that he's not human and his backstory is a lie. But Toya reminds him that everything that has happened since they met is real, right? He doesn't care if he's not technically human. Yukito is touched and thanks him.
Ariel praises Sakura's performance, too. Tomoyo says she'll make a copy of the tape into a family heirloom. The older kids are losing it over the boys, of course, but Toya is too tired after giving up his powers to really respond to the adulation. Sakura notices this and knows it was his choice. Now Yukito has to support Toya.
But Yukito is also delighted to see Sakura and the kids, so he invites them for tea. So this film that they were making is part of another school festival thing, so there are booths and stuff set up around, so when he's inviting them for tea, it's at this festival. Toya is a bit cold to shout on an Ariel, as usual, but it doesn't dampen the mood. He's mostly his old self, he just has to go take a nap in the music room right now, which makes Yukito look sad and wistful.
Aww. Ariel also takes his leave, though he gives Shaodan another smug, "Do your best," which sets him off, of course. Shaodan, Tomoyo, Sakura, and Yukito have fun at the school festival. We get a lot of Sakura's dreamy gaze on Yukito, who is very dreamy in his shy, nerd way. As the kids want to try the Starry Corridor attraction, it's a tunnel of love type thing, Nakadoa costs them, but of course Toya has already gone to nap.
The plot has advanced too far for your interruptions, Nakuru.
They tell them where he is, and Nakuru lets Yukito and Sakura into the Starry Corridor together. As per the manga, it is the perfect place to have a love confession because it is so pretty and romantic, with curtains and hanging starlights, constellations on the ceiling. Sakura is enchanted. She remembers looking up at the stars and deciding to tell him her true feelings.
So, in a very sweet sequence, she does. He's very gentle about listening to her and taking her seriously. A child watching for the first time might actually think he could return her feelings. He's very sincere when he looks down at her. He says he likes her too, but the person she likes most isn't him.
He goes on to explain, she really likes her father too, right? Are the feelings she has for him and her dad the same? Sakura thinks about it. Her face is troubled. They're similar, she says. Yukito says, well, he does look a lot like her dad. He's not trying to dismiss her feelings or anything. He acts as if he already knew. And he says he's so happy he's a part of her family. And Sakura's like, you know my feelings because you care that much for someone else, huh? And she guesses it's her brother. She talks him up, and Yukito admits he wouldn't even be there without him.
Yukito says Toya's his number one, but he's not sure how Toya feels. Sakura says she's okay with this, but if Toya's ever mean to him, she'll come beat him up for Yuki. And Yukito extends the same courtesy to her. If she has someone she likes most too, and that person makes her cry, he'll give them a piece of his mind too.
This is all perfect, but then a bunch of the starlights shatter over them. Outside, Tomoyo and Shaodan notice it's taking a while, and Shaodan wants to go in after them, so he takes off into the darkness. Yue has protected Sakura with his wings, but he says he definitely senses Klo. Sakura hears someone coming, so she gets out the maze card and the illusion card to protect their privacy by sending the other kids through a starry, endless maze, sure. But that also messes up Shaodan's attempt to help her. He gets out his sword to cut through the celestial Escher-like space.
Meanwhile, Sakura and Yue are chasing Klo's presence. Sakura gets separated, and Yue and Shaodan meet up instead. Yue is impressed Shaodan broke through the maze, so he helps take him to Sakura. Speaking of, Sakura has found Ariel, who has his staff out. Ariel puts her to sleep, catching her, and, well, it looks like he's been found out. She changed two cards at once and also tracked him down. She is much more powerful now. There's just a little bit to go. He bids her do her best, then everything returns to normal.
Sakura is unconscious, which is why the card's powers fade, returning the other students to the normal attraction. When she wakes up in Shaodan's care, she explains what she saw before she passed out.
Nakadu asks Ariel why he asked them to set any of this up, and is it okay? Like, is any of this okay to be doing? And Ariel just blows them off, vaguely.
God, Ariel would be a frustrating boss. Sakura tells Yukito she's actually okay, and the kids walk home together. She's only a little bit somber, and Shaodan does notice. Tomoyo checks in on her, telling her to go to bed early and get rest. Then she leaves them together alone. Sakura thanks Shaodan for being there for her, and he bursts out that he'll walk her home. She asks if they can stop at the park, and he agrees. Under the watchful eye of the King Penguin Slide, the kids sit on swings, and Sakura tells Shaodan about how confessing to Yukito went.
She admits she doesn't feel exactly the same for Yukito and her dad, but she understood she'd be happy if Yukito were with the one he likes most, just like how Tomoyo said she just wants the person she likes to be happy. If Yukito is happy, she knows she'll be happy, too, but there are tears in her eyes still. She feels like crying. She just doesn't want Yukito to see her being upset.
And as she cries, Shaodan gives her a handkerchief and smiles at her, saying he totally understands what she's saying. And she walks up and cries on his chest a little.
She says that Yukito said she'll find a number one love who will love her the most too, and Shaodan just hugs her and says, yeah, she'll find him. The music swells, the sun sets.
Oh, kids, it's going to be okay!
So, episode 67, it is maybe the next morning, it's a morning after this, we see that Shaodan's handkerchief is folded neatly on Sakura's desk. She wakes up and is able to kind of smile for Kero's small sleeping form, and even gives herself a little smile in the mirror. She's relieved that she's a little more herself now, and she knows that she has Shaodan to thank for that. Her dad is also glad she's feeling better. Even though she covered things up well, he's her dad and could tell she was sad. He serves her pancakes and tells her Toya is sleeping in since he's not feeling well. Sakura hasn't seen Yukito for a while, too. As she skates to school, she thinks about him, but also Shaodan. There's about to be a festival at Tsukimine Shrine, and she wants to invite Shaodan, even though he doesn't like the cold. She has him pinky promise to meet her there on Sunday. Ariel sneaks into frame, also, to tell Shaodan she's happy again because of him, and Shaodan tries to wrap his head around that.
The week passes, and Sakura is more and more tired each day. When Friday rolls around, she's falling asleep at her desk. They have some amount of class on Saturday, apparently, and she wakes up at the end of the lesson. Shaodan asks her what's up, but Tomoyo bustles her out before she has to explain herself to him. She and Tomoyo discuss something slightly mysterious on the way home, and Tomoyo continues to be supernaturally sweet and okay with things. Bless you, Tomoyo, please be okay.
In the next scene at home, Sakura collapses. She's finally finished with whatever she's been doing that's making her so tired. She stayed up all night, maybe? Poor kid. It isn't cloak card business, it's something else. And just in time, Shaodan showed up. He was supposed to be at the shrine, but he was worried about her, so he went to her house first. He's beet red when she notices he did this for her, but she appreciates it. Kero stays home to nap. He helped her with her mysterious project, aw, and she says she'll bring him back snacks. The twilight background for the walk is so pretty. The backgrounds for this show are so nice.
They are.
Like, back to the production value was very high. Like, my god, yeah. The beautiful, beautiful backgrounds are part of it.
Sakura gives Shaodan back his handkerchief, and the scarf she's been knitting for him, too. Surprise! He's taken aback and almost doesn't respond before she worries she messed up, but he puts it on reverently and thanks her. She says she's feeling much better about Yukito now, so it's okay they're all meeting up. Cut to Yuki and Toya. Yuki admits he knew Sakura liked him, but he needs to not have her hung up on him and missing her own number one. He's worried she'll be sad to see him again, but Toya thinks it'll be fine. Tomoyo checks in with Shaodan, who says he hasn't told Sakura about his feelings yet because of what she just went through with Yukito. She'll think about how upset he'd be if she turned him down, and that'll make things too hard. Tomoyo doesn't have time to respond because Toya has to buy them all treats. Yukito asks him why he's so grumpy about paying for Shaodan's, and Toya says it's because he's going to take something precious from him soon. But Sakura asks for juice, too, and that buys Toya and Yukito more time alone as they go grab some more treats for everyone.
Yukito says he noticed Toya can't sense Sakura anymore. She managed to sneak up on him, and he regrets taking his power. But Toya says that all he did was what Yukito would have done. If he had a lunch and Toya was starving, he would have given it to him, and that's all this is. The kids get to the beautiful moon-reflecting pool with nothing living in it and gaze at the moon, but Ariel's reflection/shadow interrupts, and before Sakura can understand what's up, a horse painted on the shrine sign comes to life as a spectral steed and attacks them, leaping into the air.
Our heroes have to try and stop it, and Sakura has an idea, but needs Shaodan's help. He uses wind magic to tornado the horse into the pond, and she uses the thunder card to zap it. This works for some reason, and Tomoyo got it all on tape. Toya and Yukito catch up, but the whole shrine grounds have gone dark as the electricity went dark. Sakura can help with that. She got the glow card at the shrine originally, and now she uses it again to light everything up so the festival won't have to be called off.
Shaodan catches some little glowy bits, and Tomoyo tells him that even if he did make Sakura sad, it wouldn't weigh on her forever. She'll accept his real feelings and respond with her own real feelings, whatever those are. So he can't use the Yukito rejection as an excuse. That is my word, not hers. Sakura stands alone under a snow of little glowies as the music trills and the episode ends.
All right. In episode 68, Suppy calls Erilyn for dinner. Suppy has noticed he's made a decision, and he's sealing up a letter saying it's almost over. He looks out at the moonlit night, saying that Sakura's gotten very powerful. Nakuto pops in to call him to dinner, too, since they made it. They're all taken with a sudden flurry of snow that falls, and Ariel even thinks of Yue.
So later, there's snow trouble at the school, and snowmen are attacking. Full-form Keroberos is stuck in a big snowman, and Yue is annoyed with how tough this is. Sakura is fighting back, but it's a supernatural snowball fight, and she's struggling, getting turned into a snowman herself as Ariel and crew watch from the shadows. Sakura is done with this and transforms another card, snow. Her own pretty Yuki Onna gives the snowmen a taste of their own medicine, and our butterfly-winged antagonists just lounge around watching. I like how this is not the first time in this batch of episodes we've sort of entered a seed in progress. Like, that's pretty fun.
Yeah. Tomoyo and Sakura catch up to her. Kano-chan says she's getting so strong she might surpass Chloe one day. But Yue kills the mood by saying she has a long way to go to even be Chloe's equal. That night, Sakura can't sleep, and she asks Kano what kind of person Chloe actually was. And Kano says that Yue has a higher opinion of Chloe than he does, for reasons. Kano also cared about Chloe, but that was the past. He has Sakura now. Sakura knows she's struggling with magic, though, and questions if she's really worthy. Kano says they're different people, no comparison, and puts her to bed.
But Kano watches the snow and says this reminds him of when Chloe died. It was snowy, and he just told them out of the blue his lifespan had ended. He was so selfish that Kano half expects he's still alive and just messing with them. This freaks Sakura out, who has been listening. Maybe that is what's going on. Maybe.
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 The next day, she tells Shaodan and Tomoyo she wants to use the return card to go back to the past and see what really happened with Chloe, and get to understand him better. Behind a snowman, Ariel listens to this with his enigmatic smile.
Sakura uses the card at the tree at the shrine. In one of my fave outfits ever, by the way, it's so cute. It's a great episode to go screen cap. She pinky promises with Shaodan that she'll come back to the right time safe and sound. She asks the tree to take her back to a time before Chloe passed away.
And she opens her eyes in a warm, sunny garden. In the distance, she sees Kato in his full form, and Yue flies down to him. Kato sees a bear tree that hasn't bloomed yet. Yue says it'll bloom soon, and Kato asks when soon is. As she's eavesdropping, Chloe himself comes up from behind her and seems to know she's there, saying they're waiting. And he walks out and uses the flower card to make that bear tree bloom beautifully with cherry blossoms. Kato thinks that was a bit flashy, but Yue seems to think it was wonderful.
Later, she wakes up, but she's still in the past. She napped with this Kato-chan. In fact, they're all napping under the tree, and only she and Chloe are awake. He knows she's from the future, and asks her what she wanted to know from him. She says strange things are happening, and she feels his presence each time. He says something kind of convoluted about how, well, if she thinks he's going to, he is. And if not, he isn't. What the fuck? She notices they all got along so well, and she's really sad they're not still together. But he asks if she likes them, Yue and Kero, and yeah, she does. He gets up and says summer will end soon. And now it is in fact the end of summer, even fall. He says he's the same as a falling leaf at the changing of the seasons, and he knows how lonely it is. She chases after him, but he's disappearing into a forest of red leaves that becomes the inside of his home, the one Ariel now lives in. Chloe is sitting in what is now Ariel's chair to tell Hue and Kero he's dying that day. We've seen this scene before, but now we see more.
The Guardians are upset. They think he's joking, or at least someone as powerful as him should be able to stop this. He says the fact he's so powerful is why he can prepare for the person they'll cherish after him someday. And Yue's reaction to this is why he'll be the judge. But Kero will pick the candidate. He wants them to be with someone they can be happy with. It's natural for people to pass the torch on to someone new, and he explains this to Sakura, assuring her she's worthy and doing a good job with them. But she won't let him go yet because she doesn't feel like she can replace him. She loves the Guardians, but she's not him. And he says, yeah, that's the point. She needs to live her life to the fullest with the future always in front of her.
Now the winter is almost over, we see snowdrops opening. A song plays with sprightly lyrics as spring flowers open all around them and Sakura watches, understanding blooming inside of her, too. She smiles, finally. But Chloe is gone. His last words, it's okay that I am me and you are you. You have a future only you can create. She remembers these when she returns to her own time and her relieved friends. She says she wasn't able to ask him what the fuck was going on, but she did see him at Ariel's house with Kero and Yue, and Kero realizes he didn't know where Chloe died after all. His memory of that was erased.
And Ariel stands atop the torii saying it was Chloe Reed's doing, and finally says that yeah, they knew him as Ariel, but he was once called Chloe Reed.
Gasp.
I'm so shocked!
So shocked. I think that was a really neat addition to the anime. Like, that sequence is not really in the manga, but it feels like it could have been. Like, even the dialogue being pretty like thoughtful and well written, everything that Chloe says is pretty profound and really fits with the rest of it. Yeah. What did you think about that, Lucy?
Yeah, I like it. I like the addition of this card. I'm not a fan of the dream card. Personally, it feels a little like it takes away from her own abilities, but I like the return card because it seems to like enhance our knowledge of things. And I think it was a good scene.
Yeah, it's a very, very beautiful sequence and an interesting way to lead into like the final stuff.
Yeah.
Episode 69. Nice. Not so nice, actually, because our antagonists finally reveal themselves.
Ariel uses his sunburst staff to transform Supi and Nakuru into their true forms. The ones Sakura saw in her dream, of course. Kero yells at him, why did he trouble her so much? But Ariel bangs his staff down and says, let's begin, and causes an eclipse, as you do. Tomoyo collapses, and we see Toya collapse too, on the way to the shrine with Yukito. Yue has to catch Toya, and he knows this is Chloe's doing.
Everyone in the town falls asleep, and we see many beloved characters slumped at their desks and on their couches, etc. Ariel meant to put Sakura's crew to sleep too, but she and Xiaodan are too strong. He says if they don't fix this before daybreak, it'll be dark forever. She needs to use her magic to dispel this darkness, and time is ticking. But Sakura doesn't think she can attack Ariel, so he attacks her, and Kero transforms to protect her. Of course Supi is having none of that, and Kero faces off against him with some beams and fire. It's a whole effects battle, and Kero doesn't come out on top. He falls from the sky in a crumpled mess.
Yue shows up and helps out with his magic, while holding onto Toya's body. Poor thing. He confronts Ariel, knowing now that he'd been transformed against his will when he caught him the other day. But he can't fully get into it with Ariel because Ruby Moon wants to fight him. They're doing well against Yue and taunt him. Even after taking Toya's powers, he can't win. Must be the difference between their masters.
Ooh, burn. The Guardians are ready for another showdown, but Sakura screams at everyone to stop. She tells Xiaodan to protect Tomoyo and her brother, and he accepts. Then she confronts Ariel herself. Why would he do this? He says she has to fight him. She won't just let everyone sleep in darkness forever, will she? She uses shield to protect herself from a beam and jump to try and get closer to him.
The Guardians fight each other while she tries and fails to attack him. Xiaodan uses his wind spell to cushion her fall, too. But now he's used too much power to stay awake. Again, Ariel tells her to break his spell if she ever wants Xiaodan to wake up again. Sakura tries to send the same set of cards after him as she used against Yue, but that won't work. He even burns up the wings on her boots from jump. This really pisses off Kero and Yue, who redouble their efforts against their opponents and make some headway this time. Their opponents say it must be their belief in their master.
This time, Sakuta is protected by the cards themselves, which swirl around her. But there are still 8 left that need to be transformed. Maybe she has a card left that can defeat Ariel's magic? She throws up the last 8 and transforms them all at once. A risky move, but she pulls it off. Only not all of them manage to change. The dark and the light are still untransformed. Why?
Well, they are the cards most attuned to Kato and Yue. Sakuta thinks about how dark is night when things go to sleep. Maybe she can erase the darkness with light? She calls on the light card specifically, but she just can't get to respond. Kato and Yue come up to her. Kato hands her the card again with his teeth.
They explain that light and dark are always together, so maybe the guardians can help. She needs to use her staff to transform the cards, but if she absorbs Kato and Yue into her staff first, their magic can help her. If she can dispel the darkness, it'll all be okay. They'll return to their former selves, but if not... well, they might be gone forever. She cries at the thought, and they embrace her.
But Yue says it's not just them, it's everyone that will be a victim if they don't pull this off. Kato reminds her of her invincible spell. She says, "I'll definitely be alright," and follows through, absorbing them both into her staff as they discorporate into yellow and blue light. And she throws the light and dark cards back up into the air and tries to transform them again. She almost loses faith in herself and loses the cards entirely, until Shadon comes up to grab the staff with her and offer his power to. And he says he believes in her. He knows she can do it.
Together, with one more repetition of her invincible spell, they manage it and the cards transform. Light shoots up into the sky and dispels the darkness. We see splatters of light pour down over familiar locations, like the penguin slide, and the background is overtaken by brightness.
When they finish, the sky returns to normal, and so do all their friends. Yue and Carol look just fine. Tomoyo wakes up with no clue what happened, but Toyo is still asleep. Yue says not to worry, and then Sakura's attention is taken as Ariel and his goons land before them. He says it's over. He won't pose any threat to her now. The cards circle around Sakuta, all mastered by her now, and collect back into their deck in her hands. She hugs them tightly, and Ariel smiles at the sight.
Everyone else watches for a moment, then Kato speaks for all of us and demands an explanation from Ariel, only he's gone. Sakuta helps Shadon, who's exhausted now, and he finally spits it out. He likes her! The episode ends on her staring at him in disbelief.
And whoa, that was a whole lot for one episode!
But remember how much of the manga there was left after basically this part? And only one anime episode to wrap it up.
Yeah, speaking of which, episode 70! It's the last episode, oh my god! The episode opens on normal school chatter that is lost on Sakuta as she sits at her desk, thinking about what Shadon sprung on her. She's in a daze. Tomoyo waves a hand in front of her face, but it takes her a while to respond. Shadon has also arrived in the classroom, and he says good morning to her, but she barely responds to him either.
Mr. Tarada informs them that, unfortunately, Ariel's going back to England tomorrow, big surprise, and Shadon and Sakuta agree they need to talk to him. So they do. His big wrought iron gate opens for them by itself, and they make their way up the path to his big empty mansion. It's like no one was ever here, but the lights come on by themselves, and Sakuta senses Klo's presence. Kato's starting to remember everything. The spell on him is breaking.
Sakuta wonders what Ariel meant by, "it's all over." A door opens by itself, beckoning them in, and Sakuta wants Tomoyo to stay away, but she insists on filming this. We even get her camera's perspective as she walks into the room, only to have party poppers go off and a tea table spread with a feast served by Nakuru.
It's a tea party, so Alice in Wonderland. Ariel says they've been waiting for them, and Kato's so mad, this is just like Klo.
The kids sit down and he finally explains. His mischief is over. The cards needed to be reborn under a new master's power if they were to survive, and Sakuta needed a good reason to gain enough power to be able to change them herself. This is the trouble Klo said he caused Sakuta after Yue's judgment, and she needed to believe it was real trouble or she wouldn't try hard enough. Sakuta admits that's probably true. Meanwhile, Kato and Supi are still not getting along. It allows for comedic beats between all the more serious stuff.
And Ariel admits he didn't actually have everything planned out. Some unexpected things did happen along the way. Like what? He says he'll keep that a secret, glancing in Shadon's direction.
While Kato shoves cookies into Supi's mouth and wrestles him.
Ariel says they have a special guest, someone they all know well, and he opens a door for Mizuki-sensei to step through. She explains a bit more about how in cahoots she and Ariel were, though not as intimately as the manga would go on to elucidate.
Kato and Tsuppi decide to binge treats for this party while everyone catches up a bit, but Ariel checks in on Yue, who is not in a party mood.
He's got some legitimate complaints. If Chloe wasn't really dead, why did he abandon them to a new master? Well, Ariel explains that he's not actually just Chloe Reed. They needed someone new since he's not the same person. This does not comfort Yue. He would have waited for him. He does love their new master, but he loved Chloe, we know, though he won't say it.
Ariel says he does have Chloe's memories, so they can talk freely. And he says he's glad he did this and met everyone. He admits one of the unexpected things was that he expected Yukito to love Sakura, but he fell for Toya instead. And Sakura wasn't expected to fall from Shaldan either. Back in the other room, we see Sakura chatting amiably with everyone, but when she looks at Shaldan, she blushes and looks uncomfortable.
Later that night, Shaldan gets a call from his mom, who he treats with extreme respect. I'm sure this is nothing to worry about. Anyway, at school the next day, Sakura is still in a daze. Everything is blue, the background is sketchy, she's not her normal cheerful self, she's not engaged with the world, even Tomoe was faded from her perspective. She walks home alone and runs into Shaldan, who wants to talk to her. They stop on a bridge, it's the one from the first OP, and he tells her he had a call from his mom last night. He told her that everything was over and the strange occurrences wouldn't be happening again. He also says he's glad he got to meet Sakura. When he came to Japan, he was only thinking of himself and getting more powerful, but Sakura was considerate of others and had so much he didn't have. Sakura contradicts him. When he first came, he was serious and a hard worker. He had things she didn't have. She trails off, still collecting her thoughts. But before she can continue, Shaodan turned away from her, thanks her. He just wanted to tell her all that. Left alone, Sakura wonders how she really feels about him.
At home, Toya says Mizuki told him everything earlier, and man, Chloe Reed's a dick, huh? And Yukito's like, yeah, but I owe him everything. It's a sweet moment, but Sakura comes home despondent. She lies down on her bed, and even Kato notices she's still kind of weird. She's thinking about Shaldan and his feelings, and hers. She knows she likes him, and not just as a friend, and the feeling isn't the same as what she felt for Yukito. Meanwhile, Mei-Ling yells at Shaldan over the phone about how unresolved his situation is, and he hangs up on her, sad but calm. He's all packed and ready to go, but the bear still sits there, ungifted. Sakura comes down the stairs in the morning, still subdued. Her dad notices, but the phone rings, and it's Tomoyo with some important and dire news. Tadada-sensei said at choir that Shaldan wasn't going to come to school anymore. Hearing this, Sakura's tears fall as she thinks about not seeing Shaldan anymore. A magic circle opens below her, and a card appears in her hands, pink and Sakura-ified. She smiles when she sees it, and holds it tight.
At the airport, Shaldan thinks how Sakura might be mad at him for not telling her he was leaving, but Sakura's already running through the airport to say goodbye. She calls to him, and they both face each other, but don't know what to say. It's almost time to board. Sakura has to say something. She asks for the bear he has, and he smiles, blushing, and hands it over so gently.
The opening theme plays as they smile at each other, and the ending this final time is clips of them getting closer throughout the whole series, then a final scene where she's alone in the airport knowing they'll meet again, and the card has a heart with wings on it, but no name. Then there's a note from Sakura, like to us, at the end of the episode, and a cute moment where Kato and the other characters thank the audience for being with them, as filmed by Tomoyo.
Oh, it's so sweet. Like, what a beautiful way to end that. So we did it. Now we need to have a tea party. I especially do. My throat is crazy right now. Yeah, I think I'm having super allergies.
We both haven't recorded in like a month, so we're both just like dying as our voices are like, what is this? We don't do this anymore. What's happening?
It's okay. We're going to get strong again.
Yes. And we did it. We made it through. I mean, we enjoyed it. I don't mean that to sound like it was difficult, but it was difficult. It was just enjoyable, but difficult. Anyway, we did it. And of course, we still have more to go on our CCS anime journey, but more on that later. This was a good chunk of episodes and a satisfying end of the series, so let's discuss. I know people have a lot of mixed and legitimate feelings about Mei Ling, but I really appreciate that they came back to her character for an episode in this season. They could have just dropped her completely, but they took the time to have some closure for her. Like, this is a good example of how an anime-only character can be incorporated into the plot. They kept her out of the big plot beats so they didn't have to rewrite that and, like, potentially change another character's role, but they did still remember her and allow her character to show how the other characters are growing and changing.
Yeah, I love her now, and I love how she rounds out the girl squad.
Yeah, and she manages to be a good foil for, like, Sakura, Tomoyo, and even Shaodan, like, both in how she fights and deals with, like, the cards, but also how she communicates with the other characters. All right, so we talked about this next point when we discussed the manga, but really I was struck again by how they chose to tell us who Ariel was early on and leave the other characters in the dark, so we had that dramatic irony for most of the season. I mean, we don't know everything, but we know from the go that he's this season's big plot stuff, and we pretty quickly figure out he's Clo's reincarnation or something, since they're all like, a sense, a presence.
and he's just there every time they sense a presence, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no way you were not putting that together. It is very clear.
Yeah. And it lets stuff just hit differently, you know? Like, the Christmas episode, we can tell he's guiding her to appreciate the cards and to look inside herself. And I don't know if that would have come through if we thought he was just another classmate. But I mean, maybe some of this is the perspective we bring, like, because as we've said before, we can't unknow what we know.
Yeah, and I agree it's a really interesting decision. It reminds me of, I just read Dune for the first time, which was a big treat to give myself. And it has a similar strong storytelling decision where there's a character that you know dies really early on and you know who kills them. And like, and you are, because like the chapters are each begun with a little excerpt from like a history book. And so like, you know what's going to happen for chapters and chapters, and you're watching as things come together to make that happen. So you just chapters and chapters of dramatic irony, and it works. It's so Shakespearean. It's great. It does soften some of the conflict. I mean, in Cardcaptor Sakura, not in Dune. In the manga, more so. In the anime, he bedevils them for a lot longer, and the music stings and such make him feel maybe even more sinister. But that might also be good for this story, as we've talked about before, right? A slightly soft conflict might be one of the things that makes this work for elementary schoolers.
Yeah, yeah. So, overall, this keeps pretty close to the original manga, especially compared to, like, how Ray Earth ended. But there are some changes between the versions that stood out to us.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, just the whole end is really different. And of course it would be, because the manga hadn't come out yet. And it kind of did give them a chance to maybe try two different methods here, mm-hmm. where, like, they're a little bit more resolved in the manga than they are in the anime, I think.
Yeah.
Like, remember, you get that little fast forward and everything, but...
Yeah, yeah. Although I think, like, ultimately they end in the same place, whereas, like, I mean, I guess Ray Earth, they kind of end in the same place, but I feel like Ray Earth, you have so much, like, they're so different, and there even are just kind of different outcomes, whereas this, yeah. like, they omit some stuff, but they ultimately end in the same spot, more yeah. or less.
Yeah, like, as I said, we're not even going to get into a play-by-play of how different the last few episodes are, because, like, they're really, really different. But again, not in any way that, like, really changes how you feel about it, for the most part, yeah. except for some of the things we're about to discuss.
Yeah. So, first of all, the Ariel-Mizuki-sensei relationship is not mentioned, which, like, I get. That's fine.
Yeah, I know, okay... I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I'd straight up cut Mizuki-sensei from both versions if I were a magical time-traveling editor. Not because of the iffy relationships, which whatever, but because I think she's boring. I'm mean. I'm a hater. I don't like her. And I think everything she does would have been interesting for another character to do. I'm not sure that I always think she's boring. I think sometimes on a read-through I really like her, but I think after the anime, I'm like, I don't think anything she does needed to be done by her instead of another character. And I don't think she pays off particularly well.
Yeah, like, I like her, but she does take away some of the kid agency, right? Like, imagine if Shaodan had been the one to give Sakura the bell, or Kato, or there was no bell. Like, she works best as a red herring in the first season, so when you're rereading it, or, like, going straight from the manga to the anime, she really doesn't have anything to give the audience at that point.
Yeah.
Of course, the big thing that's different is Sokka's dad's not the other half of Clo's reincarnation, which is a little sad, but I get it. It was kind of convoluted.
Yeah.
And this does mean that she's not, like, kind of Clo's daughter, which does sort of give more meaning to her own star's magic or whatever. It's not hereditary. She's just powerful in her own right.
Yeah. And she's less related to Shaodan, not that they were super closely related, which also kind of makes their connection feel more meaningful to me, I guess. Mm. I feel like this works perfectly well, to be honest. I think the last time that I read and watched this, I kind of missed it. I was like, man, I actually really liked that, you know, her dad was part of it. And this time, I don't feel like I missed that as much. I was like, yeah, this works just fine.
Yeah, I am fine with it only being in the manga, although it does feel like that last scene in the kitchen or whatever when they're eating the cakes and he's explaining stuff feels really anticlimactic because, like, I'm expecting, like, you know, the next big thing and then it's just, ah, Mizuki Sensei's here! Oh, I was doing it for your own good! And, like, I think it makes sense if you don't know that's coming, but it feels yeah. a little like, oh, no.
I agree that it's a little weird for us because we're anticipating something else, but yeah.
Yeah. But I'm okay with it only being in the manga, and it's kind of like a fun piece to the Clo-Reed puzzle because he's like so mysterious, and I get the feeling they kind of love him, like Clamp kind of loves him and just kind of wanted to keep like giving him stuff. But it didn't really need to be there for the overall story, and I do kind of think that it works a little bit better without that aspect as far as like Sokka's own agency is concerned.
Yeah.
And as we kind of touched on earlier, the last little thing here is that although Sakura says she knows they'll meet again, we don't get that jump at the very, very end to show Shaodan coming back with his, like, new visa or whatever. I wonder if this could have any effect on future events, Robin!
I wonder.
And of course, there is a new card. Mysterious! What could it mean?
Well, we'll wrap up even more of our feelings in the next episode, but for now, wow, it's been a long time focusing on just this anime. It's been a great watch. Truly, no matter how beloved this show is, it isn't enough. It is so beautiful and heartfelt and fun. I'm getting ready to focus on reading again, Lucy.
Yeah, me too. All right. I said our journey isn't over, and in our next episode, we'll be discussing the two Cardcaptor Sakura movies, so look forward to that. And don't worry, as we mentioned, we will still discuss the dubs, so there is more to come after that, too.
Yeah, and we gotta touch on games and stuff. There's Sakura wrap-up to do.
Yes.
Until then, you can follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at ClampCastPod, on Facebook as Clampcast in Wonderland, and on our website, ClampCastInWonderland.com. Are we on Blue Sky?
We are on Blue Sky. We're on Blue Sky and possibly Threads, I think? We might be on... No, we're not on Mastodon yet, I don't think, but we're on the other two, maybe, Twitter replacements. We'll see. You can support us on Patreon by making purchases through our bookshop.org store, or just by writing a review or sharing this podcast with your friends. Reviews in Apple Podcasts are especially helpful, supposedly, so try doing that, maybe.
Thanks for coming with us on our journey through Clamp's Wonderland.
Until next time, remember that everything will definitely be all right.
And try not to lose an eye.